Welcome to fellowship. And turn to Acts chapter 21, verse 17. This is the record here of Paul wanting to go to Jerusalem, and God and the other believers are trying to talk him out of it. And Paul, you know, he was a Roman citizen, but he was also a Jew by birth, and he was also a Pharisee, and it's documented in there. I'm not going to show you all that stuff, but he had that background. And when he became an apostle, he would travel around, and quite often he'd go to a new city, and the first thing he'd do is he would visit the synagogue, and he would present the word to the Judean believers first, and then when they rejected it, which they usually did, then he would go and present it to the Greeks, and they would receive it. And that was sort of his method of operation. And you see in the book of Romans, chapter 10, where he talks about my heart's desire for Israel is that they be saved. And he was really concerned about Israel. So here in chapter 21, verse 17, I'm reading from the Message translation here and not the King James. It says here, in Jerusalem, our friends, he just arrived at Jerusalem. Our friends, glad to see us, received us with open arms. The first thing, next morning, we took Paul to see James. All the church leaders were there. And at the time of greeting and small talk, Paul told the story, detail by detail, of what God had done among the non-Jewish people through his ministry. And they listened with delight and gave God the glory. They had a story to tell you, too. And just what's been happening here, thousands upon thousands of God-fearing Jews have become believers in Jesus. There's also a problem because they are more zealous than ever in observing the laws of Moses. I love this translation because it, you know, we read King James, and when you read the same verses over and over again in the same translation, sometimes your eyes glaze over and you don't really look at it. But when you see it in a different translation, it sort of opens your eyes. So they had a problem. You know, it was thousands and thousands of people got born again, but they got born again and they became even more zealous for the law. Well, yeah, we're saved, but we still got to do the Day of Atonement. We still got to do the Feast of the Passover, and we got to do. I remember one time I was teaching and I got that, went dyslexic on it. I said Feast of the Passover instead of Feast of the whatever. So. But anyway, they were really zealous for the law. And they'd been told that you advise believing Jews who are surrounded by unbelieving outsiders to go light on Moses, telling them they don't need to circumcise their children and keep the old traditions. I like this verse, this translation, because it translates that tradition. And that's what happens, is a lot of times religion becomes traditions. And it's like, well, we've been doing it this way forever. Well, why do you do it that way? It's like, there's this old joke where these two kids grew up, and one went to church A, and one went to church B, two completely different denominations. And the one, they went to this one kid's church, and he said, what's that mean when you stand up? What's that mean when you sit down? And why do you sing here? And why did they do that? And what's the little wafer mean? And like, all this stuff, and trying to figure that out. And then next day, next Sunday, they went to the other kid's church, and he's saying, well, what's it mean when they do this? And what's it mean when that? And so, and then the pastor puts his watch on the podium, and he says, what does that mean? He said, that doesn't mean nothing. In other words, he might teach all day. Yeah, I stole that joke. The old one. So anyway, they had a problem. They didn't like the fact that Paul was teaching them that to be born again and walk with Christ and to walk with God, you don't have to do the Old Testament. You don't have to be circumcised. You got direct access to God. You don't have to do those laws. And that was upsetting to them, because this is traditions they've been following for thousands of years. Another interesting thing, keep your finger here. I'm going to come back to Acts. Well, you keep your finger or not. I don't care. Let's go to Galatians for one verse. Galatians chapter 2. So it's interesting that you see here that James was running the church. Galatians chapter 2. It was soon evident that God entrusted me with a message to the non-Jews, as Peter had been preaching to the Jews. And you see in King James, why don't you read your King James there?
In 7?
Yeah, 2:7.
But contrary wise, when they saw that the gospel of the circumcision was committed unto me, as the gospel of the circumcision was unto Peter.
You mean the uncircumcision?
Uncircumcision.
Yeah, so it says here, yeah, it clearly states in this verse that Paul was given the ministry to the Gentiles and Peter was given the ministry to the Judean believers. But yet, Paul, in Acts chapter 21, Paul goes to Jerusalem and who's running the show? James. Well, what happened is, It's the first example of nepotism in the Christian church. They put James in there because James is very legalistic.
Half-brother of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, he's the half-brother of Jesus Christ. And it really says nowhere in the Bible, I'll show you in a minute, it really never says James was an apostle. He doesn't say he had a ministry. Let's go to Acts chapter 23. So if you kept your finger there, you're just a couple pages over. And I never kept my finger there, so I'm going to have to flip through it. 23, along about verse 12. This is where there was a plot to kill Paul. It's interesting. You get, in religion and politics, you sometimes get people that, like, that can't handle somebody disagreeing with them. Like, in Islam, they get so upset that we don't follow the Prophet Muhammad that they feel threatened by that, and they feel they have to do jihad and commit terrorist acts and kill people that are unbelievers. And you see that in politics now, where you get these people, they call themselves Antifa, which they said they're anti-fascists, but they're really classic fascists, that go around and want to start fights, because they had a prayer meeting in Portland, Oregon, or was it Eugene? Okay. And they people wanted to get together and publicly pray for a president, and these fascist people with masks on come in and want to start a fight, and they feel threatened by the fact that somebody would vote for and support Trump. Well, what you got here is the same thing. These people feel threatened by the fact that Paul taught that people can get saved and walk with God without following the Old Testament law. And he was teaching that Christ is the end of the law to them that believe it. And so, along about verse 12 here in chapter 23, and I'm going to read from the Message translation. The next day, the Jews worked up a plot against Paul. They took a solemn oath that they would neither eat nor drink until they had killed him. Well, wait a minute, it's a solemn oath, so they're doing this, it's a religious thing. They went in and they prayed about this, and but yet, killing, murder is against the law. So they didn't like the fact that this guy was teaching things against their law, so in order to fix it, they're going to violate their law. See how it makes no sense? And see, a rational person would think, well, you know, I don't really care if you pray to Muhammad or if you pray to Allah or if you pray to the Catholic Church or the or whatever, and I don't care if you vote for the Libertarian or the Democrat or the Republican, as long as you're not threatening me, you know. It's like everybody has their own freedom. But see, the irrational person will say, wait a minute, you didn't vote for the communist? I must kill you. Are you threatening me? You know, like Venus and Butthead, you know. it's an irrational, unreasonable hatred is what we're seeing here. And we see it today in politics. And, I mean, that's what's led to the Civil War we had 150 years ago. The Democrats got so upset when the Republicans were going to take their slaves away that they went to war over it. It's interesting, what's that guy, Dinesh D'Souza?
Mm-hmm.
He's been around a while. I just sort of discovered him on YouTube. When I'm at the office, I can't watch YouTube because I'm working on buildings, but I can put in my earbuds and listen. So I like to find something that's like, you know, half an hour or an hour long or something, just listen to something. Anyway, he was speaking, and he was saying, no Republican ever in the history of the United States ever owned a slave. And people saying, how can you say that? He says, well, you know, no, they've never found it. Nobody's ever found it. He put the challenge out there. And so somebody said, I found it. And I guess Ulysses S. Grant had owned a slave. And he said, well, that's still not true, because when he did, he was a Democrat. He switched to being a Republican and got rid of the slaves. And so no Republican ever owned a slave. But again, it became unreasonable hatred, where something that should have been solved economically and legally and otherwise became a war, and that was the war we had more American casualties than all our other wars combined. I mean, it was terrible. And it was horrible. And all because, you know, unreasonable hatred. So, they said they would neither eat nor drink until they had killed him. Over 40 of them ritually bound themselves. They went in and they took an oath in the temple to murder. See the insanity? Murder is like, in the Old Testament it says, thou shalt not kill, and actually it should be translated, thou shalt not murder, because there's times when you have to go to war and you have to defend yourself and you have to kill. But you don't never commit. God doesn't say we can't kill. God says we can't murder. And, you know, if somebody came in here this morning and said, I'm going to behead everybody in this fellowship, well, damn right, us men would stand up and we'd fight and kill them. Or at least subdue them and call the police. But if you have to, you defend yourself. But we don't murder. And see, these people became possessed with a spirit of murder over the simple fact that they didn't like what Paul taught. So we bound ourselves with a solemn oath to eat nothing until we have killed Paul. But we need your help. Send a request to the council, to the captain, to bring Paul back, that you can investigate the charges in more detail. So they wanted to set up a trap. They're saying, okay, request that Paul come back to the before the leaders.
Yeah, actually, it's the chief priests and elders.
Right. And now, who's the head of the church there? James. James could have squelched this. James could have put a stop to it, and James didn't do it. You know, a lot of people think James is a real good guy. Well, then why did James get a book in the Bible? How did that happen? He's not such a good guy. He's not even an apostle. How did he get a book in the Bible? Well, see, God put all this stuff in the Bible so we could learn from it. That's why. And parts of the book of James are wonderful translations. You know, there's wonderful things in there. There's some amazing verses that are great. But then he's also got a verse where it says, faith without works is dead. Well, Paul said, we're saved by faith, not of works, lest any man should boast. Now, one of those has to be true, and one of those has to be a lie. And so it's interesting. So God put all this stuff in the Bible so we can learn from it. And it happens to great ministries. I mean, a lot of us have been involved in various ministries and churches throughout our lives. And I've seen it happen, you know, many, many times. Like when I was a little kid, I grew up Lutheran. Well, the Lutherans I followed in the 1960s were nothing like the Lutherans that were started by Martin Luther. It was a completely different group, teaching different things. And I got involved in other ministries. I followed, you know, there was great men. There were great mentors to me in my life. John Schroyer, Victor Paul Werbel, other people have done great things. Those guys are now past. And other people are running their ministries, and they're doing different things now than they used to. And it's changed a lot. So God puts this in the Bible so we can learn from this. And he shows that there's certain hallmarks of when a ministry is genuine and when a ministry becomes false. You know, and it's really, really obvious to see if a group wants to kill people, wants to commit murder, and yet if they're consecrating it as a holy act, there's something serious. That group is not following the one true God. There's something seriously wrong there. So anyway, they were trying to set this trap, and it's interesting. Let me read the last of this. Let me read this last part here. Send a request from the council to the captain to bring Paul back so that you can investigate the charges in more detail. We'll do the rest. Before he gets anywhere near you, we'll have killed him, and you won't be involved. He's telling that to the religious leaders. So we're going to do the dirty work, and you guys can just wash your hands and look all holy and have nothing. It will happen even before he gets to your, it won't happen in your chamber or whatever they, you know, they, in the temple. It'll happen outside. And it's the same thing, you know, it's like these crooked politicians, you know, it's like all the mysterious deaths around the Clintons. You know, they don't do it themselves. You know, you can't trace it back to them. But everybody knows. And see, everybody would have known that these guys were guilty, but there'd be no evidence. There's no paper trail. There's nothing there.
No smoking gun.
No smoking gun. The leadership and most of the Jewish people were so, because, remember I read, they would, after they got born again, they were even more zealous for the law. And that's a spirit too, because where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. Where you have more and more bondage, that's another spirit that gets involved.